Welcome to today's deep dive. We're tackling a pretty massive shift in the technology landscape today.
Yeah, it's a big one.
It really is. We're talking about the death of traditional software documentation, which, you know, sounds dramatic, but the source material we're working with today is this conceptual document, and it's titled CRD Capability Requirements Document.
Right.
And our mission for this deep dive is to basically understand why the rise of AI agents is fundamentally breaking our traditional methods of documenting software.
Breaking it completely, yeah.
Yeah, and to unpack why shifting our focus from how software is built to what it actually achieves is really the only way to survive this coming wave of agentic software.
It is a critical pivot. I mean, we are moving from an era of static constructions to one of dynamic execution.
Right.
And the blueprints we've relied on for decades, they simply cannot keep up with that reality anymore.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because I think the best way I can conceptualize what we're facing here is to think about building a physical house. Like, usually when you build a wooden house, you expect to start with a highly specific blueprint, right?
Sure.
It tells the human crew exactly where every 2x4 goes, the exact dimensions of the nails, the specific grade of lumber, all of it.
Right, it maps everything out.
Exactly. And for decades, that is exactly how we've treated software documentation.
Yeah.
You know, we write this hyper-specific blueprint, hand it to human developers, and they build a digital house.
And that analogy holds up perfectly for traditional development.
Mm.
You know, you're describing a completely deterministic process there.
Mm-hmm.
The instructions map one-to-one with the materials used and the final structure that gets built. There's no ambiguity.
Right. But the reality our source material is describing is radically different. Imagine if instead of a human crew, you hand that same blueprint to an incredibly advanced robotic builder.
Okay.
And this builder doesn't just use wood. Like, it might decide on the fly to use 3D printed polymers.
Oh, yeah.
Or it might deploy microscopic nanobots to assemble the walls.
Right.
It might even just project holographic bricks that actually feel solid.
Right, right.
So suddenly your 100-page blueprint detailing the exact dimensions of a wooden 2x4 is just, it's completely useless.
It's obsolete.
Yeah. The builder doesn't need to know about the materials. We need a completely different kind of blueprint that just basically says, I need a room where people can sleep and it needs to keep the rain out.
That framing is perfect. Mm-hmm. It captures the core crisis that software engineering is facing right now today. We are transitioning into an era where the builder is no longer just a human reading a product requirements document or a PRD.
Right.
The builder is an agentic AI. And because the materials, meaning the underlying implementation of the code, can change from second to second based on how that AI reasons, the only stable anchor we have left is the purpose of the room itself.
The desired capability.
Exactly. The capability.
Which, if you're a product manager listening to this, you probably know the acute pain of writing a 40-page PRD.
Oh, yeah.
Detailing every single button state and database relationship, only to have it become entirely obsolete. The literal day coding actually begins.
Pretty much, yeah.
But this source document suggests things are about to get much more chaotic than just outdated wikis, doesn't it?
Significantly more chaotic. I mean, to grasp why this new CRD framework is being proposed, we have to look at the artifacts we currently rely on.
Okay.
Think about that PRD you mentioned. It describes a holistic product. Then you have user stories, which define UX and user needs. You have storybooks for front-end visual components and API specifications for back-end data interfaces.
Right, the standard toolkit. I mean, you need all of them to get a modern application off the ground.
You do. But consider the perspective they all share. Each of those tools view software through one highly specific implementation-bound lens.
Like how it's being built.
Exactly. Yeah. A storybook assumes you are building a visual front-end for a human to click on. An API spec assumes a rigid programmatic backend. They are tied to the how. But when an agentic AI enters the picture, the how becomes entirely fluid.
Fluid meaning it can just change its mind.
Pretty much. A useful software task might be executed by conventional hard-coded logic today. Tomorrow, it might be executed entirely by a reasoning AI agent interpreting raw data. Or maybe a mix of both.
And the source actually points out an even more radical scenario here, which blew my mind. An agent might receive a requirement, write the software from scratch to perform the task, execute the software once to get the result, and then immediately discard the code, saving only the output for later.
The ephemeral software concept?
Yeah.
It's fascinating. When software is being written, executed, and discarded on the fly trying to document the implementation, it's just a fool's errand.
Right.
If the how changes every 5 minutes based on an AI's real-time reasoning, documenting the how actually creates a massive liability, it restricts the agent.
It boxes it in.
Right. The only stable truth is the what. The fact that you need to convert currency or schedule a meeting or request a moving quote. That underlying business need does not change, even if the code executing it is generated a millisecond before it runs.
So if the traditional physical blueprint is obsolete, if we can't track the digital 2x4s anymore, what is the fundamental atom or building block we should be tracking instead?
Well, the source material introduces a concept to serve as that exact building block. It's called the MLE, or minimum logical element.
Minimum logical element. That sounds incredibly academic, I have to say.
A little bit, yeah.
How does that actually translate to the software we use every day?
It translates by finding the smallest, complete, contextually meaningful ability that produces a meaningful outcome.
Okay.
The operating word in that definition is logical as opposed to technical.
Let me push back on that distinction for a second.
Sure.
Why separate logical from technical? Because if I have a piece of software, I can break it down into microservices,
yeah,
right? And I can break those down into individual functions and then into lines of code and eventually into just binary. Aren't those the true minimum elements?
Well, from a purely machine execution standpoint, yes. But from a meaning standpoint, no. Those tiny technical parts might be flawlessly valid and highly reusable, but as you break them down, they suffer from amnesia.
Amnesia?
Yeah, they lose the context that explains their purpose. Think about a generic text input string. It's infinitely reusable across a million applications, but observing that text string tells you absolutely nothing about why it exists in your specific application.
Oh, I see. It's like having a pile of loose gears and springs.
Exactly.
They are the foundational elements of a machine, but holding a single spring doesn't tell me if I'm building a Swiss watch or a car engine.
That's a great way to put it. The MLE attempts to find a Goldilocks zone. It seeks the boundary between being too massive to be modular and being so granular that the purpose just vanishes completely.
Right.
And historically, various tech disciplines actually gravitated toward their own versions of an MLE without using a unified term for it.
Give me an example of how a specific discipline handles that.
Okay, take UX and UI design. For them, the minimum meaningful unit has long been the user story.
Right. As a user, I want to do X.
Exactly. It encapsulates a specific user goal. In database and domain-driven design, architects talk about a bounded context. In front-end development, it's a component like a self-contained button or a search bar.
Mm-hmm.
The insight the source material offers is not that these things are identical, but that every discipline naturally seeks out the smallest unit that still makes logical contextual sense for their specific domain.
Okay, so I see how a front-end engineer's minimum unit is a visual component and a data engineer's minimum unit is a bounded context.
Yeah.
But if we're stepping back and looking at the entire software package, you know, the whole product, mm-hmm. what is the MLE for that?
At the macro level of complete usable software, the source proposes that the MLE is the capability.
Let's ground this. What qualifies as a capability?
Request a quote, schedule a meeting, convert currency, classify an incoming document. These are actions that delivered an undeniable, meaningful outcome to a user or a system. Notice that a capability doesn't dictate a specific screen or a specific API endpoint or an agent-specific internal tool. It exists at a conceptual layer above all those implementation mechanics.
Hold on. Let me challenge that terminology, though.
Mm.
Because when you say request a quote or convert currency, my immediate instinct is to just say, well, you're just talking about a feature.
Right.
Everyone in the tech world knows what a feature is. We have feature roadmaps, feature flags, feature sprints. Why do we need to invent a new term like capability MLE when feature is universally understood?
That is the most common reaction to this framework, and the text actually addresses it head on. Historically, feature has been our closest informal proxy.
Right.
Cross-functional teams organize around features because it's really the only way to get UX backend data and business stakeholders speaking the same language to deliver an outcome.
Exactly.
But the critical flaw with the word feature is its total lack of a rigorous boundary.
What do you mean by a lack of a rigorous boundary?
Well, think about it. If a product manager tells you their team is launching a new feature next week, what are they actually launching? A feature could be a tiny aesthetic toggle switch on a user profile page.
Right.
Or a feature could be an entirely new deeply integrated messaging subsystem that took 10 engineers 6 months to build.
Sure.
The word feature is an empty bucket. The industry throws everything into it regardless of scale or completeness.
It's completely subjective based on who is writing the marketing copy, basically.
Yes, it's entirely squishy. A capability MLE, on the other hand, cannot just be whatever someone decides to slap a label on. To qualify as a capability, it has to survive what the source calls the contextual logical meaning test.
Okay, walk me through the mechanics of that test. How do we prove something is actually an MLE?
The test asks a specific question. If you divide this proposed capability any further, do the resulting pieces still represent independently complete and contextually meaningful abilities? If the answer is yes, then your original candidate was too bloated. It was likely a collection of multiple capabilities. But if further decomposition produces fragments that no longer retain the original business purpose, then you have successfully located the MLE boundary.
We need a concrete example to make that stick, I think. Let's take something common, like a logistics app for a moving company.
Perfect. Let's say we have a block of software labeled Manage Moving Quotes.
Okay.
We run the test. Can we break Manage Moving Quotes down into independently meaningful abilities? Yes, we can break it down into Request Quote, Amend Quote, Accept Quote, and Cancel Quote.
Right.
Every single one of those actions is complete and meaningful on its own. Therefore, Manage Moving Quotes fails the test. It is not an MLE. It's a suite of them.
Okay, I follow the logic there. So we zoom in on one of those smaller pieces. Let's test Request a Quote. We'll try to break that down further.
Let's do it. If we decompose the technical process of Request a Quote, what do we get? We get mechanical steps like validate, post a code store, address string in database, call third-party pricing function, and render confirmation message to screen.
Right.
Now we apply the test question. Do these individual parts represent independently contextually meaningful abilities at the level of complete software?
No, they don't. Because if I hand the ability to validate a postal code to a customer, they can't do anything with it.
Exactly.
It doesn't get them a moving quote. It has totally lost the context of the greater business goal.
You've hit the nail on the head. The moment you hit validate postal code, you've fallen through the floorly MLE boundary. You've entered the realm of technical fragments and implementation steps.
Okay.
Request a quote sits perfectly in that Goldilocks zone. It is the capability MLE.
I see the utility there.
Yeah.
I mean, it forces a very honest accounting of what the software actually does. Mm-hmm. But this brings us to the operational reality right now. If a capability is this perfectly balanced, stable unit of meaning, how do we write it down? Because the premise of this entire deep dive is that AI agents are going to be reading, interpreting, and executing these definitions.
Right.
So how do you document capabilities so that a human product manager and an autonomous AI agent look at it and understand the exact same thing?
That challenge is precisely why the CRD, the capability requirements document, was created. The source describes the CRD as the common semantic middle ground.
Let me conceptualize that. So traditional documentation is like a novel, great for humans, terrible for machines. And traditional code is like a mathematical proof, perfectly precise for machines, completely opaque to most humans. The CRD is trying to act like a Rosetta Stone between human intent and machine execution.
That is a phenomenal analogy, yes. Mm-hmm. Think of a diplomat negotiating between two nations with entirely different cultures. The CRD must be human-readable enough for stakeholders to debate business logic, structurally standardized enough for basic software to parse, but crucially, it must be context-rich enough to preserve nuance for an intelligent agent.
Right.
Traditional machine-readable formats completely fail at this last point.
Are you talking about things like JSON or XML? Because we've been using those to pass data between systems for decades.
Yeah.
Why do they fail an agent?
Because formats like JSON provide syntax, not semantics. They provide data structures that a dumb deterministic program can parse. It tells the system, here is a string of text and here is an integer.
Okay.
But agent readable requires something vastly more sophisticated. An intelligent actor needs to understand purpose constraints and authority to safely execute a capability. JSON doesn't tell an AI why the integer is there or what rules govern changing it.
I see.
To achieve that, the CRD mandates incredibly explicit documentation semantics.
Okay, let's dig into the mechanics of those semantics. So what does this all mean for the AI? If I'm an AI reading a CRD instead of a standard human PRD, what specifically changes for me?
Well, think about how much implicit context humans rely on. We constantly read between the lines. If a traditional PRD states currency conversion was added because our enterprise customers operate in Europe, A human developer instinctively understands that sentence is the rationale behind the feature.
Right, it's just background context.
Exactly. They know it's not a hard-coded rule dictating how the software must run, but an autonomous agent does not share our human intuition.
So if an AI reads that same sentence without explicit semantic tags, it might interpret customers operating in Europe as a strict conditional variable.
Sure.
It might literally block a currency conversion for a user located in Asia, thinking it's enforcing a business rule.
Precisely. The AI paralyzes itself with misunderstood context. A CRD solves this by forcing the author to explicitly separate and tag the semantics. You must clearly delineate the capability purpose from the rationale. You have to draw a hard line between a binding rule or invariant, for example. A single transaction must never be charged twice, and an implementation choice like calendar availability is currently reprieved using the Google Calendar API.
Well, I can see how dangerous it would be to conflate those. If an agent thinks using Google Calendar is a binding foundational rule of the capability, it'll just completely break down if the company migrates to Microsoft Outlook.
And that leads directly into one of the most fascinating mechanisms within the CRD framework, the concept of recommended defaults.
Yes, let's spend some time on this. I was looking through the source material, and it places a massive emphasis on defaults. Why are defaults so critical for agentic systems compared to the software we use today?
Consider the paradigm of traditional software development. Traditional requirements force a false binary. When you write code, something is either a strict mandatory requirement that the system must obey, or it is entirely unspecified, leaving it up to the developer to guess or the user to manually configure. It's mandatory or it's dealer's choice.
It's rigid. If X happens, then you must do Y.
Exactly. But agentic systems operate in fluid, non-deterministic environments. They benefit immensely from a third category, the recommended default. A recommended default provides explicit instruction on what should normally happen when there is ambiguity without locking the system into a rigid rule that can't be overridden by context.
I want to bridge the gap between that theory and user experience, because I actually tried to use a travel booking chat bot a few weeks ago.
Oh, how did that go?
Oh, it was awful. I told it, find me a flight to New York on Friday. It immediately errored out and said, please specify morning, afternoon, or evening departure.
Right, of course.
And I didn't care when I flew, but because I didn't provide the exact parameters the system needed to execute its strict rule, it paralyzed itself. It pushed the cognitive load right back onto me.
That is the perfect illustration of a system lacking recommended defaults. The bot only understood strict constraints. If it had a CRD dictating its behavior, the CRD might include a recommended default stating when a user requests travel on a specific date without specifying a time default to searching for morning departures and present three options.
So it gives the agent an intelligent starting point.
It gives it behavioral wisdom. The agent knows how to act gracefully in ambiguity, but crucially, because it is tagged semantically as a default and not an invariant rule, the agent knows it is allowed to break it.
Right.
If you later say, actually, just book whatever is cheapest, even if it's at midnight, the agent understands it can override the morning default to satisfy your new constraint. It is the difference between programming a rigid machine and advising a competent human assistant.
It's a subtle shift, but the implications for user experience are just massive. Now, alongside defaults, the CRD framework places a heavy emphasis on defining boundaries. We touched on boundaries conceptually when we discussed the MLE. But the source material says that in a CRD, boundaries are a first-class, explicitly documented concept.
Yes. You must literally write down where the capability ends.
Meaning it is just as important to document what the software does not do.
Often more important, actually. Let's return to our moving quote example. The CRD for request, a moving quote, will explicitly list what falls inside the boundary, collecting user information, calculating distance, checking vehicle availability, and returning an estimated price.
Right.
But critically, it will also feature an exclusion list. It explicitly states that negotiating the final price, processing a credit card payment, and locking in the schedule are outside the boundary of this capability.
Which speaks directly to the reality of building software. Feature creep is the bane of every product team.
Oh, absolutely.
A simple tool to get a quote slowly morphs over 2 years into a bloated monster that includes a chat interface, a payment gateway, and a PDF generator.
And feature creep destroys modularity. And when you introduce AI agents into the mix, muddy boundaries become actively dangerous. If an agent is trying to dynamically chain together capabilities to accomplish a task for you, it needs to know the exact perimeter of every tool it uses.
That makes sense.
If the boundary of the, quote, capability is poorly defined, the agent might accidentally trigger a live payment process when it only intended to check a theoretical price. Explicit boundaries make compositions safe.
Wow. Yeah, you definitely don't want an AI accidentally paying for that.
Nice.
Which leads us to what I consider the most philosophical shift in this entire document. It's something I've been calling the Great Divide in my notes.
Okay.
The CRD mandates a strict firewall-level separation between two foundational concepts, the reusable capability definition and the operational capability realization.
This separation is the engine that makes the entire framework viable long-term.
Just the terminology highlights the split between what a thing is conceptually and how it's actually running in the real world. Let's break down the first half. What goes into the reusable capability definition?
The definition describes the capability entirely independently of any specific technology platform or system. It is the pure concept. Schedule a meeting.
Okay.
The definition contains the purpose, the boundaries we just discussed, the semantic rules, and the recommended defaults. It fundamentally does not care if you execute it using Microsoft Outlook, an open source Linux calendar, or a physical abacus.
It is the platonic ideal of scheduling meeting. It's the pure intent.
Exactly. Then completely separated from that, you have the operational capability realization. The realization documents how a specific currently running software system is actually fulfilling that capability in the real world at this exact moment.
Okay, so this is where the technical reality lives. This is where you would write currently implemented via the Google Calendar API authenticated using OAuth 2.0.
Precisely. The realization tracks the mechanical lifecycle. It lists the specific API endpoints, the server availability, the operational constraints like a hard limit of 200 attendees per meeting, and the security dependencies. The brilliance of this architectural divide is how it handles change. Tomorrow, your company might decide to rip out Google Calendar and migrate the entire enterprise to Outlook.
A migration that usually causes months of documentation chaos.
Always. But under the CRD framework, the reusable capability definition of schedule a meeting doesn't change by a single comma. The fundamental business logic remains perfectly stable. You simply retire the old operational realization and attach a new one pointing to the Outlook APIs.
I love this framing because it exposes how badly we usually conflate the tool with the task. It's like we've collectively forgotten the difference between the fundamental human desire of talking to a friend and the specific action of opening the WhatsApp interface on an iPhone.
Yes.
The capability we want is talking to a friend. WhatsApp is just today's realization of that capability.
That is a brilliant way to conceptualize it. And when you adopt a capability-first architecture, it forces you to reverse the way we have traditionally built software. For decades, the industry has implicitly started with the visible application. We mock up a screen, we design the buttons, and then we build the back-end databases and APIs necessary to make that screen function.
Right.
We assume the UI is the software.
Yeah, like if there is no screen for a user to click, does the software even exist?
Right. But in this framework, the answer is a resounding yes. UI is strictly optional. A capability can be complete, highly valuable software without ever having a graphical front end. Its interface might solely be a headless API, or it might be exposed via MCP, a model context protocol designed specifically for agents to query. A human user might never directly see it.
This headless approach sounds incredibly powerful for automation, but practically speaking, it sounds like a recipe for a massive mess.
Oh, so.
Well, if an enterprise has thousands of these invisible headless capabilities floating around in their backend, how do they know what they're actually for?
That vulnerability is exactly where the CRD acts as a protective wrapper. The source material refers to this as reuse without losing purpose. In traditional software engineering, we strive to make technical components as generic and reusable as possible. But there is a dark side to that. As components become more generic, they suffer from provenance amnesia. They forget why they were built.
How does that impact an AI agent?
Imagine an agent autonomously exploring a company's internal network to complete a financial task. It stumbles across a generic calculation engine API. Because the API is generic, the agent has no idea what it is authorized to use it for.
Right, it could be anything.
Exactly. Is it for calculating state taxes? Is it strictly for rendering image dimensions? Without provenance, the agent is flying blind. It might apply a tax calculation engine to an entirely inappropriate data set.
Yikes.
But if that headless calculation engine is wrapped in a CRD, it retains its purpose history. Even with zero UI, the CRD ensures that the original capability was designed to serve and all the business rules associated with it remain securely attached to the code.
Okay, I am entirely sold on this for building new software. Like, if a startup begins tomorrow, they write beautiful CRDs, they rigorously separate definition from realization, and they give everything perfect semantic boundaries. It sounds like utopia.
It does.
But let's face reality. We live in a world burdened by decades of messy, undocumented legacy software. We have millions of lines of spaghetti code, undocumented databases, and APIs that haven't been touched since 2015. How does an AI agent deal with the reality of what actually exists today?
That is the multi-trillion dollar question.
Yeah.
And it's where the role of the AI agent transforms. They are not just robotic builders. They become digital archaeologists.
Archaeologists, digging through the ruins of our legacy code bases.
Exactly. The source material outlines a process called agent-driven decomposition and composition. We can unleash agents onto our existing messy reality. An agent can ingest a massive bloated legacy code base scan through an outdated open API spec, or analyze a complex database schema and reverse engineer those technical artifacts to extract the pure capabilities hidden inside.
So the agent reads 10,000 lines of tangled code and recognizes, oh, underneath all this mess, the core intent here is simply create an invoice.
Yes, that is decomposition. The agent looking at one giant legacy application and realizing it actually contains a dozen distinct capability MLEs.
Okay, and composition.
Alternatively, the agent can perform composition. It might analyze 50 tiny disconnected API endpoints scattered across different servers and realize that collectively, if chained together, they form one meaningful business capability. The agent's job is to excavate the minimum logical units without forcing the messy reality into rigid predefined boxes.
Wait, hold on. Let me challenge this, because this sounds terrifying from a security and compliance perspective.
Oh, I know.
You're telling me we're going to let an AI loose on a 15-year-old code base to infer our core business logic? What if the agent gets creative?
You are hitting on the core vulnerability of automated reverse engineering right there.
Think about it.
Mm-hmm.
What if an agent sees a bizarre, convoluted workaround that some exhausted developer hard-coded at 2 a.m. in 2018 to fix a temporary bug? What if the agent reverse engineers that temporary bug and assumes it is a foundational, unchangeable business rule?
Right.
How does the CRD framework prevent an agent from essentially writing fan fiction about how our software is supposed to work?
That is a very real danger, and the framework includes a highly specific built-in safeguard to prevent exactly that scenario. It all routes back to the strict semantics we discussed earlier.
Okay.
When agents generate CRDs by reverse engineering existing software, they are strictly mandated to document the evidentiary basis of their claims. They must ruthlessly distinguish between what they know as an explicit fact and what they infer as a possibility.
Give me a practical scenario of how an agent documents that difference.
The source text provides a perfect example of this. Imagine an agent is analyzing the backend code for a customer intake form. It scans the validation logic and finds a line of code that explicitly rejects any form submission if the email address field does not contain an at symbol.
All right, well, that's standard technical validation.
Correct. For the agent, that line of code is an explicit fact. The system undeniably rejects those strings. However, the agent using its LLM reasoning capabilities might hypothesize, the intent behind this validation is to ensure the marketing department has valid data for their weekly newsletter.
Which might be entirely true, but it also might just be because the database will literally crash if the string is formatted incorrectly.
Precisely. The agent does not know the why for certain. Therefore, the CRD semantic rules force the agent to categorize that hypothesis regarding the marketing department as a reasonable inference or a speculative rationale.
I see.
It is absolutely forbidden from tagging it as an explicit fact. And even more importantly, the framework demands that unknown or unresolved categories remain highly visible in the documentation.
So if the agent discovers a weird validation rule and has no contextual clues as to why it exists, it doesn't just hallucinate a plausible reason to make the document look tidy and complete. It flags it in bright red text as unknown rationale.
Yes. Unknown information must be highlighted rather than silently plastered over with invented assumptions. This mechanism completely prevents reverse-engineered guesswork from masquerading as authoritative business rules.
Right.
The resulting CRD becomes a transparent, trustworthy map of exactly what the agent discovered, combined with an honest accounting of the limits of its knowledge.
That is incredibly reassuring, honestly. It keeps the human stakeholders in the loop for verifying the actual business intent while leveraging the AI to do the grueling heavy lifting of reading millions of lines of legacy code.
It establishes the AI as a reliable archaeological partner rather than an unpredictable black box.
Let's pull back and look at the macro level here.
Yeah.
Because if we can actually achieve this, if we can utilize agents to perfectly map out what all of our global software actually does, piece by piece, capability by capability, while securely distinguishing facts from inferences, what does the digital world look like?
It's completely different.
The source material suggests this framework unlocks a massive paradigm shift in how we interact with technology on a global scale.
If we connect all these isolated CRDs to the bigger picture, the natural evolution is the formation of capability inventories.
Inventories, like a massive global catalog.
Exactly. The text envisions two layers. First, a general capability inventory. This is an open, technology-independent catalog of pure definitions. It lists the platonic ideals. Schedule meeting. Convert currency. Verify identity.
Go.
Second, you have service capability inventories. These catalog specific real-world services like Salesforce Stripe or a boutique local API actually provide in terms of operational realizations.
So we are building a machine-readable catalog of every digital action possible on the internet. How did that practically change the way software operates?
It revolutionizes how machines negotiate with other machines. Let's pause and talk about MCP, the Model Context Protocol, for a second.
Sure.
MCP is currently how a lot of agentic AI discovers and utilizes external tools. But right now, connecting an agent to an MCP server is like dumping a massive, unorganized toolbox onto the floor.
It just dumps out a giant list of technical endpoints and says, good luck figuring out what these do.
Exactly. The agent has to expend massive compute power trying to guess how to chain those loose tools together to achieve a goal. But if we transition to capability-driven API and MCP design powered by CRDs, the interface changes completely.
Nice.
The server doesn't just list loose tools, it lists meaningful capability MLEs. It broadcasts to the agent, here are the complete contextually meaningful actions I am authorized and capable of performing from it.
So under the old model, an AI agent trying to help me move houses would have to ask a server, how do we use the Salesforce API? Which of these 500 technical endpoints do I hit first to input a string of text?
Right.
Under the new CRD model, what does the agent ask the network?
The agent queries the open network and simply asks which available services currently implement the capability request moving.
Right. Wow. That completely flips the script.
It shifts the entire paradigm of software discovery. We move away from discovering applications, brands, or vendors, and we move entirely toward discovering actions. The CRD acts as an open capability language. It provides a common semantic ground that seamlessly connects human product requirements, agent reasoning interfaces, and back-end APIs into one unified ecosystem.
That is profound. I mean, it means this isn't just an internal tool for making a developer's life slightly easier. It's a fundamentally new way for machines to negotiate with other machines about human intent.
Exactly.
If a human says, "Get me a moving quote," their personal AI assistant just reaches into the global capability inventory, finds three different back-end services that offer that exact capability. MLE negotiates the security contracts and returns the best price to the human.
Yep.
The AI doesn't care if it's using brand A or brand B software, as long as the capability semantic matches perfectly.
Exactly. Documentation shifts from being a passive, dusty PDF sitting in a shared corporate drive into an active semantic architecture that powers the digital economy.
We have covered an incredible amount of conceptual ground today. Let's do a quick recap to anchor these massive ideas for everyone listening.
Good idea.
The core crisis is that AI agents make the implementation of software too fluid and unpredictable to document reliably. So the CRD, the capability requirements document, proposes we rigorously separate the what from the how.
Correct. We establish the capability as the minimum logical element. It is the smallest unit of software that retains independent contextual business meaning.
And to ensure AI agents don't misunderstand our human intentions, these CRDs enforce strict semantics. They force us to separate binding rules from recommended defaults. And when agents reverse engineer legacy code, they must explicitly flag the difference between a known fact and a reasonable inference.
And by adhering to those rules, we can build a capability-first architecture, an architecture where visual UI is optional, where legacy code can be safely excavated, and where software is discovered purely by the actions it performs rather than the brand name on the box.
Which leaves me with a final, somewhat provocative thought for everyone to mull over as we wrap up. We started this deep dive talking about blueprints for a house. If this open capability language really takes hold, and every single digital action in the world is cataloged purely by its MLE, will the concept of buying an app become entirely obsolete?
Oh man, that is a big question.
Think about it. If you want to track your fitness or manage your small business finances, will you ever go to an app store again to download a bloated piece of software?
Probably not.
Or will we soon live in a world where you just subscribe to a single highly intelligent personal AI? And that AI seamlessly chains together these invisible headless capabilities from thousands of different vendors on the fly, perfectly customizing the software to your exact workflow on any given day. If the blueprint only needs to describe what the house does, maybe we are rapidly approaching a future where we don't need to care who builds it.
That invisible capability-driven ecosystem is exactly the horizon this framework is pointing toward.
Fascinating stuff. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.